This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thank you for being here this afternoon. At this time of year, we like to check in with our federal lawmakers. Sometimes they are on a break by now. That is not the case today. Joining us live from Washington, D.C., U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. Senator, thanks for being on with us.
You bet, Kyle. Very good to be with you.
So talk about the situation back there as the days evolve. We've been hearing different things on the national news, and it sounds like there's a delay in essentially heading off for a long break.
That's right. We had negotiators going until 3 a.m. This morning, and they feel like they can hammer out an outline of a deal over the weekend. So we're going to stay in here through next week, and we sure hope we can get it done because we really have three big issues that are wrapped up here. We have our our own southern border. Second of all, we've got the Middle East war. And third, we've got Ukraine. And Ukraine is one of the biggest international issues we've ever faced, because if we drop support for Ukraine, we're essentially saying to Putin, you can take that country. That would be like Chamberlain going to Hitler and saying, you can take Czechoslovakia and we'll just look the other way and say peace in our time. It will encourage every dictator around the world to start a war against a neighbor.
And you've got, of course, the Israel situation going on as well. It seems like a lot of intense issues all culminating at one point.
Yeah, I've never seen three such big issues wrapped into a single bill. And the issue in Israel and Hamas, the type of war that's being conducted, enormous casualties, civilian casualties, now estimated to be around 18,000 to 19,000. And we're talking about 7,000 children, maybe 5,000 or 6,000 adult women. It is really something that we just haven't seen. And of course, the underlying issue is, how do you break this cycle of hate and violence? And to me, the only possible answer is to have two states for two people. That is to have a Palestinian state alongside the country of Israel. But that was not. There's no easy path to get there.
And talk about what all the supplemental bill is covering. Kind of explain what is being worked on right now.
Yeah, so the biggest complicated piece is the border. President Biden put a package together of about $14 billion to say, look, we got to do a lot more to make sure there's a rule of law on the border. And that means both more Customs and Border Protection personnel. It means a lot of more high-tech technology. But it also means a lot more caseworkers, so that we're tracking everyone who's headed to asylum hearings. It means that we have more asylum judges, so that those hearings are held within 6 months, not 4 to 5 years. There's a host of pieces. But you have to have 60 votes in the Senate. And there are colleagues saying that, hey, let's turn this into a policy bill as well. And immigration policy is very messy and complicated. And so that's what the negotiators are trying to hammer out over the weekend.
Now, if they don't get something hammered out, what happens next?
Well, if they don't, it probably means we fail until come back the second week of January. And that's just not acceptable. If we don't send the message that we're solid in supporting Ukraine, I mean, Russia is going to crank up their offensive this spring. The coalition with Europe is going to fall apart. The Atlantic Alliance will be in trouble. NATO will be cracked. And just American leadership in advocating for democracies instead of dictatorships will be deeply damaged. So it's not just Ukraine. It's a whole set of things that would flow from a failure in Ukraine.
And this comes at a time when the federal budget deficit is certainly an issue as well.
Absolutely. It sure is. And, of course, we have both the number of tax breaks for the very wealthy. That is a big piece of that. We also have a lot of infrastructure spending that we did to try to get us through COVID and to reinvest in infrastructure in America. I mean, I'm absolutely convinced the nations that are going to thrive this century are the ones that invest in education and invest in infrastructure. And we need to do a little more of both, but that's expensive.
Talk about, as you look back towards Oregon, accomplishments from this past year that you feel like have impacted the state and maybe even particularly Southern Oregon funding-wise.
Well, the thing I'm most proud of is that we delivered more than 100 community-initiated projects. I had my team fanned out across the state. They worked with communities on what is their top priority. And then using my seat on the Appropriations Spending Committee, I fought for those projects. We got more than 100 of them. And, you know, it's kind of a beautiful thing when you can say, hey, this is a decision for your top priority, and I fought for it, and of course our colleagues fought for it as well, but I'm the only one who sits on the spending committee, so I had to kind of lead that effort. Really pleased with some of the investment in water solutions for our home state. So continued to get a significant amount of money for the Klamath. We have now a cumulative about $200 million to help irrigators put their water, their ditches into pipes, if you will, because we have so much drought. So much less snowpack providing water, so every drop really counts, and helping some communities whose wells have been contaminated by nitrates find solutions to fix that. So water solutions, and then something that's really kind of think very relevant to Douglas County, which is I'm using my role as leading the Interior Committee to really push for a lot more funds for forest management, make our forests more resilient. That means thinning, that means mowing, that means prescribed fires. It puts a lot more people to work in the woods. It delivers more timber to our mills. It's a win-win, and it makes it less likely to have a catastrophic fire.
And it seemed like last year, and I'm not sure where the funding streams exactly worked off the top of my head, but it seemed like more was put into having additional firefighters strategically placed ahead of, for instance, hot, dry conditions or stormy conditions, things like that, so that if something did start, folks would already be in place instead of scrambling for 48 hours to get them there.
Yes, it's certainly been a goal. You know, we were so shocked by the damage done by the Labor Day fires, including the Archie Creek fire, and then trying to be on top of that. You know, it's hard to if you see east winds coming in a situation where you're going to have a lot of lightning strikes and the forests are already dry, we're in trouble. And so we've got to try to be ahead of it. Not an easy thing to do. You can always use more manpower. One of the things I've been supporting is for our Oregon National Guard to be trained to have a squadrons help out with fighting fires, trying to have more federal and local coordination so that they're all working together in the same direction. This year, the fires weren't as bad as we've had a couple previous years, but, you know, it's just a matter of we will have a lot of bad fire seasons ahead. It's just it's the world. The fire season is much longer. The forests are much drier. We're having more lightning strikes, and we're even having more wind. So you combine all that, and it's a challenge we're going to have to face forever forward.
As we you mentioned Archie Creek, as we look at that situation, do you feel like the federal level is done enough there with the recovery efforts?
You know, I never really feel the federal does enough when you have the huge tragedy of people losing their homes. They lose everything, not just lost their house. They lost all their financial records. They lost all their family history. Maybe they just barely escaped with their lives. Maybe they lost their pets or their cattle. You know, it's just brutal. But I will say FEMA showed up and stayed and kept working. Maybe not as fast as I'd like, too many bureaucratic hurdles. I just talked with FEMA. I said, you know, we tried to get these replacement trailers into a number of the communities. and we couldn't get them in because FEMA was saying, well, you can't hook them up to the sewer. There's no, you know, there's no sewage capacity. And I'm like, let us use containers and pump them like an RV park. We got to get the homes back in so people are still in their community, their kids are still going to the school, so the whole communities aren't just, you know, scattered to the wind. And they were receptive to what I was saying to them, and there's other forms of feedback we had. We did get $2 million for helping families clean up the debris. We did get a pile of money for the forests. I think it was about $45 million, and a third of that's getting spent now. I'm mixing up the SRS funding that we got for the state. But we did get money for the forests as well. Oh, $30 million, that's what it was, $30 million for the forests, and a third of that's being spent now. We're pressing them to keep pushing in that regard.
You mentioned SRS. Where are we at now on Secure Rural Schools?
So for fiscal year 23, so this past year, Douglas County got about $13 million. That was, almost a third of what the state gets because, you know, Douglas County is a county with the most forests. And that was in both BLM and U.S. Forest Service land components together. And then we just got the reauthorization actually passed out of committee this morning. So Senator Wyden and I are continuing to press. It is because that program benefits Oregon more than any other state and only benefits half a dozen states. It means that we don't have a mass of states to make it an easy lift. So we just always have to be on top of it, pushing it.
So you said it got out of committee this morning. What's the process next?
Well, the next is to get it attached to a major bill going through. The odds are that would be the continuing resolution that would happen in January or early February. But every year it's been a different – we found a different way to get it done. So at one point I held a sit-in. In the majority leader's office, I invited Greg Walden to come over and join, and his chief of staff, and Senator Wyden, his chief of staff, and the six of us sat there and said, we're not leaving until we can get a guarantee we can have a vote on the next major bill, which in that case was a transportation bill going through here. And we weren't even sure we could win that vote, but you can't win a vote if you don't have the vote. And we did win the vote. We lobbied like hell to make that happen. So the continuing resolution is a possibility. We're going to seize any opportunity we can.
And do you feel like it's going to be tougher this time, just given everything else that we've been talking about?
You know, it's been so hard time after time after time, and yet we finally found a way to get it done. And so I'm just in my head, and no, we will find a way.
As you look at the overall economy in the U.S., but particularly looking at Oregon, how do you feel like the state is faring in comparison to the nation?
Well, if you're looking at unemployment, we're doing pretty well because we're only about 4% unemployment across the state. And it actually often is higher in rural areas in Douglas County, but it's about 4% in Douglas County right now. A little lower statewide, but that's really low. But what families are feeling is they're feeling pressed to the wall by the price of housing and the price of drugs. And so there's, even though unemployment is low, people are not comfortable. That we went through big price rises. You see it not just in your rent or your home mortgage. You see it definitely at the grocery store and the gas stations. So people are feeling pretty unsettled. But as to the country as a whole, we're actually doing pretty good right now.
And as you look at the kind of look back as we're getting close to wrapping up the year, what are some of the strong points, good points that you see that's come out of Congress?
Well, that takes us back to that conversation, Kyle, about the community-initiated product, the water solutions, the forest solutions. Those are all the sorts of things I'm pleased about. There were some other things. For example, I had a bill to create a rural health center and to have that at the Center for Disease Control, CDC, because we all know that the health system is very different in rural areas. That finally got implemented. and this last year, so that was great. We secured a couple tech hubs to be brought to Oregon. One will be in Corvallis with Mass Timber and the other microfluidics. And I hear microfluidics, what are those? Well, essentially, as we go into the next phase of the semiconductor world, cooling the semiconductors, the chips, if you will, becomes a big deal. And so microfluidics has to do with ways to cool those chips. And so any tech hub that puts the Oregon at the front of the nation on some of these technologies, it's a great thing. And by the way, the Mass Timber, to me, that's near and dear to my heart, because the products that came out of Mass Timber that allow us to build 14-story buildings with timber rather than concrete and steel, that is a huge expansion of the market for our own timber. And the very first Mass Timber came out of the D.R. Johnson Mill in Riddle. And so that's kind of a yay for that.
As you look ahead to 2024, what are your top priorities?
No, I'm really struck by the issues I heard about in my 36 town halls. And we're not doing enough on those things. And the top things were the cost of housing, the cost of drugs, mental health, daycare, fentanyl. Those are the big issues. So we're going to, I think, from this deal that we're trying to get done this weekend, we can really help with fentanyl at the border by buying a lot more devices that can detect fentanyl being smuggled in. Because it really doesn't, fentanyl, we may think of it coming into the U.S. Outside of the border checkpoints, but it actually comes through the border checkpoints. And it's so, you can smuggle it in such tiny quantities, and it's so potent, it's hard to stop. So we need these really sophisticated machines to try to both deter people from doing it and to catch people when they do it, because fentanyl is just killing so many Oregonians. We've lost 100,000 people in the last year because of one little speck, one little microgram of fentanyl mixed in with anything else will kill someone. And I mean, it's just, anyway, so that's brutal. But the on the housing side, the new idea I'm bringing to that is, yes, we need to do all the traditional programs to help with affordable housing, but we should kick the hedge funds out of this family housing business. Our houses should be homes for families, not a profit center for Wall Street. Those hedge funds they're driving up the prices to buy a home, and they're driving up the price to rent a home.
Now, talk about your role in the appropriations process and how that can help Oregon.
You know, this appropriations, which is a fancy word for the spending committee, I knew how important that was from watching Senator Hatfield on that committee back when I was an intern so many decades ago. And so I really kind of cut a deal when I ran for Senate that if I should win, which didn't seem too likely, that Oregon would get a seat. I'd get a seat on the spending committee. And so the reason it wouldn't have happened otherwise, because the West Coast is a little overrepresented. We've got people from Washington State, California State, Alaska, all on the spending committee. So Oregon was like, well, West Coast already has too many. So fortunately, we got the seat. As head of the Interior Committee, I can really weigh in on the things that are important to us related to our forest lands, whether they be BLM lands or whether they be U.S. Forest Service lands and a host of other issues.
And talk about what you have heard from residents as you've been around Oregon. You mentioned a little bit of that earlier, but maybe expand on that a bit.
Sure, you bet. Love doing my town halls. I'm glad COVID's over. I can do them in person. It's so much more meaningful. And I invite everybody to come to them this coming year. I'll probably be starting them in February. And at each town hall, I first meet beforehand with the county commissioners and the mayors to hear their point of view. I make sure that they have a channel of communication. So if they do have community projects that they want me to fight for, that they're working with my team to draft those in the most effective way possible, increase our odds of getting them. And then I hold a public forum for an hour and invite people. There's, you know, we don't eat it up with some panel discussion. Just say, you know, I give a few brief remarks and say, what do people want to talk about? So it's a chance for me to hear directly from folks. And the things that were most common to hear about are those things I was mentioning: fentanyl, mental health, daycare, cost of housing, cost of drugs, near the top of the list.
Do you feel like anything legislatively should be done regarding fentanyl, tougher penalties or something like that?
Well, I think the key is to, stop it from being smuggled in from Mexico, and second, stop China from sending the precursor chemicals to Mexico. We were very impressed that when we pushed China to shut down the flow directly into the United States, because it's basically coming through the mail system into the U.S., China did shut it down. They managed to do it. I mean, they're a big country, and you would think, well, how could they really succeed in doing that? But they did. But they continued the precursor chemicals to Mexico, which just kind of shifted the challenge to another location. So we're now pressing them, and they have agreed to stop the precursor chemicals to Mexico. So maybe that will help. Here's the thing: we have to recognize, as long as there is a market for something, those making it will try to create new pathways to get it to the market, and they're infinitely creative. So there's never a final answer. We just have to keep seeing what's going on and trying to stop.
All right, U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley, out of time for now. Senator, thanks for being on.
Hey, Kyle, thanks so much. And greetings to everyone. Have a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.